That just came to my mind. That's how I began when we came about 3 weeks ago, 3.5 weeks ago. That's how I began. And that's kind of how I'm leaving. And I'd like to tell the story that I remembered when I did this. In the meantime, John has been in the village, but John hadn't been in the village 3.5 weeks ago. He's the one who carved Jesus and Joseph and Mary out of the wood that's in the village center. The leftover logs from the river sauna, John Mockiston. He understood that a church building was going to be sold in Minnesota, and he and some other farmers, John's also a farmer because he lives on a farm, and he and some other farmers got together and painted the church so that it looked so beautiful that then the people didn't want to tear it down, not even the cemetery committee, who I think owns it. That is really the last ditch. I'm glad you got that. The last trench is the cemetery committee, and now this church building looks so beautiful, but then they wonder, can it still speak? So John and some others go up every Sunday morning at 8 o'clock, and they ring the bell. And I live about an hour from there, and the Sunday before we came from Minneapolis to Holden, I went up early in the morning and rang the bell with John. 75 times he rings it. He's very organized. You think things like that don't have organization and systems in them. I mean, John always rings it 8 and 75 times. That's how it gets done. It's very organized. People who are spontaneous are very organized. That means they have options in every pocket. If you're not spontaneous, that at least if you don't know it, that was not very funny. But if you are spontaneous and you know that quickness can happen, then quickness is really that you have a pile of wood, a cane, someone who has a cane story, right? Yes, and marvelous lines, and never heard from this man, but he could talk and fill a napkin. She already has. Beautiful. I have your words down here.
Oh, you have my words.
Yes, I have your words.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's a good line, too. I have your words down here. I get that one, too. You never know. It's a long drive back to Minneapolis, and I would like to do a few songs. Words. That's really kind here. I can just see it in a melodrama. I have your words down here. Right? Yes. That's the story that Malcolm was talking about. There's a man who has her words down here. About 56 years of them or so. I mean that. Oh, what's happening? Hooking together, making connections, letting one thing get to the other and get to the other until you have a network called an idea or concept or worship service, an hour. It all comes together. Who are you so I could remember you while I'm writing your songs? I feel like this is plagiarism and I'm borrowing your words. What's your name?
Allie Wick.
Allie Wick, okay.
E-L-L-Y. Don't put I in it.
E-L-L.
It's Norwegian.
Why? What, don't put what in it? What did she say? Don't put what in it? Don't put I.
L-E-S-Y. I don't want it to be made American. I-E.
Sounds like a good Holden song someday. Don't put I in it. It's Norwegian.
That's
another song. I can see this is country rock. I was baptized in Norway. Those are great words.
Krogre.
Pardon?
Krogre.
That's a
tough... K-R-O-G-E.
Yes.
Kroger.
Oh, that would be fine to stump people with. Then
that's near Oslo.
There's another one. That's near Oslo. Can you see that? I can just see that one. That sounds like a hit. That's near Oslo. Can you could really sing that? That's near Oslo.
Yeah.
Yeah, listen for it.
It used to be called Christiania when I lived.
Yeah. Hey, where were you last night in the show?
Well, I was wondering why you didn't call me.
Hey, there's a lie. There's a lie. I was wondering why you didn't call me. That's like knock three times on the... Oh, this is marvelous. We may not get any farther than each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Next time you put me on the show.
Well, yeah, right. Well, these sound like Broadway hits. Next time you put me on the show. You know, she's
I want to come up and ask you last night if I couldn't be on the program.
Yes. Well,
but I was a good girl and kept still.
Oh, there's one. I was a good girl. Oh, I was a good girl and kept still.
Do you want me to go home?
Oh, do you want me to go home? Now, she has meter. Do you hear it? Do you hear the meter in that? I mean, those things flow.
That's right.
That's right. And that's what songwriters look for. That's what people who write, you know, the front part of the hymnal look like. The problem is very often that a committee does it instead of the two of us. Right? Very often, liturgy could come off a lot smoother if you found someone who had that lilt, not a committee voice, but a poetic voice, prophetic voice. That's beautiful. I'd hire you if I was doing a worship service. I'd ask you certain questions, you'd give me answers. We could get a litany going called A Good Question and a Good Answer.
Are you sure you'd approve of my answer?
Oh, yes, I'm quite sure. Oh,
I think we'd get along fine.
That's another one. I'm sorry. That's another one. Part of it is there are a lot of people who are celebrities, haven't been circled, haven't been told somehow, say it again. Tell me another. I'll write you down. What a sentence. This is something worth waiting for. And liturgy really means it comes out. It's when your voice or your sentence gets together with something else. And that something else is very often an act. For instance, it's a tone. Sometimes it's louder. And sometimes it's on tiptoe because it's a Gloria in Excelsis. It's this... Angels we, or the Gloria in Excelsis is just, it's on tiptoe. The other day I took a picture of a shoe, and I thought like this. This is not a picture of a shoe.
Don't take your shoe off. No.
Oh, there's another one. Oh, no, don't take your shoe off. She just has this. I wondered, you know, if one could do the entire worship service and think of it in terms of shoe posture. There is a time when you... The shoe is like this. It could be kneeling. There's a time when the shoe is like this. And there's a time when the shoe is going. There's also a time when the shoe digs in. And there's a time when the shoe is like this. And there's a time, in other words, one could see where one wears a shoe and say those are, like if there are five, if you look at them carefully, one can see an entire order of worship Because order of worship is a little what Wes was talking about today. Worship is, what do you do while you're on the way? What do you do while you're on the way? And the worship is 1 hour of that way, or 15 minutes of that way. It's sometimes singled out. One could say it shouldn't be singled out, but it's really a slow motion of everything, I think. It's like a series of postures, sometimes on knees, sometimes toward each other, sometimes alone, sometimes on tiptoe, and sometimes at rest, and sometime at leaving. Those are postures of Jesus. Though if you found those pictures of Christ in those forms, you would buy them. And if you see yourself and others in those forms, you can buy in on that too. They are the same. What I'm saying is that liturgy is not just in the front of the hymnal. Liturgy is us on the way, doing certain kinds of postures, having certain kinds of feelings. You could do the whole liturgy service in terms of moods. The coming, it's like walking over the threshold. And then saying, do they see me? Do I count? And at that point, we all count. In the splash of the water, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. That name is on all of us. Therefore, we all count. Then we have to get a hold of a very important thing, and that is that we're all different. And that we get this difference, what Joyce was saying the other day, almost in our scars, in our pain. Our pain shows us our difference. I hurt differently than where you hurt. And I have to work with that all my life. And I come out of that. I go down in it on my knees. That's kind of the confession. I go into that grave, but I can get lifted out of that grave. I can stand on my feet and say his name again, the Gloria, Gloria Patri, glory to the Father, glory to the Son, glory to the Spirit. Hip, hip, hooray in the Gloria in Excelsis. It's where you get way high. You see, it's just, you can almost see it like a dance. You can see it like a time of day. It all happens sometimes in 10 minutes in the morning, right after breakfast. The whole liturgy can happen, come right before you. And if you could stop it and trace it and say, I just had it again. There it was. What I do from 10 to 11 just hit me again. Or some part of it hit me again. And then that great time for just saying, is there, you know, what is the word? You got to hear it again. Someone's got to say something. So let the old ones talk. And let the letters speak. And then the gradual, that marvelous gradual, is when you lean closer to the mic or with your ear and say, don't want to miss this. This is the Jesus word, the gospel reading. And right before it comes the gradual, which one can skip. But what the gradual means is to graduate, to step up. The reader steps up. He graduates. He gets on a high ladder so that you can't miss it. Today it would be getting close to the mic. That's the gradual. Or it would be making sure that you can hear with your, you know. That's right. It's why you're here, right? Because you want to hear. You chased him to the next seat, didn't you? Yes, I heard about it. I noticed that. You told me. When you have heard this good news, this message, then the huddle, and the creed is the huddle of the Christians, where the Christians get together, and if you could imagine everybody saying what this means to them, you know, it would be just marvelous. And then all of a sudden someone says, now let's put this back into three paragraphs. And you get the three paragraphs of the credo. That's what it is. It's the huddle. And then someone from the community, almost always the pastor, says, I've been walking in our homes this week, our town, our city, and I've been walking in the Word. I've been walking in the world and in the Word. I have 15 minutes of stuff to say. The sermon, he's a spokesman for us. Shouldn't have anything to say unless he's been with us. He doesn't have much to say unless he sometimes it can say that it's so-and-so's left leg who's hurting, and she has steel on her left side. You know, we should, pastors should know that. That's part of their commentary. Their commentary is on the shelf, but their commentary is also in the houses. That's what gives them their commenting ability. And so you can help him to say it, or you can help her to say it if you tell her and him what your comments are. And that's what the week is for. And then after that, it's so exciting. You say, what can I bring? What could I give? What could I do? So there's a big envelope that you can get into. They made them smaller so you can only get money in. But they used to be so big you could crawl in and be sealed. And they put you on the altar. It was a marvelous huge envelope. What a heap. What a heap. The altars are so small, and the buckets or the plates, so now they've reduced it. It's an abstraction called probably money. Money. But it used to be a son. It used to be a lamb. It used to be a Lord. But it was always death. It was always ultimate. But death was the giving of a life. So it was life. It looked like death. But the other side of it was a lamb giving its life. It was Isaac giving his life. His father, don't read that father Abraham had to chase Isaac, you know, every 10 minutes that Isaac was trying to run away off that hill. No. No, and even after Isaac knew, do you read that old Abraham chased Isaac for 3 hours and finally caught him in a bush? No. I mean, Isaac could have outrun old Abraham. Isaac gave his offering. It was his death, but it was his life. Now what you get in the envelope system is an abstraction of that life. It's very hard to experience it. That's why once a year, the offering should be shuffled, and then you should all take it back after it's been blessed, see, and then you spend it on gasoline, popcorn, ice cream, and you get the marvelous experience of sharing, of using your offering, and you shuffle it into your own billfolds, and you don't know the difference between that which is blessed and unblessed. It's like when you used to take a handful of grain, you know, a sample of it out of your bin, and then you test it, and then you throw it back in. It's very hard to separate back out. And the offering, almost have to imagine that offering gets shuffled back into your whole economic system of your house. And that really is responsible, isn't it? Because now everything that you have is offering. Oh my, that would be shocking, wouldn't it? But it's easier than bringing your house, your tractor, and your car down the aisle. Most aisles aren't built for automobiles. Very hard to drive them in and put them on an altar. It smashes altars. It's very difficult. So you do it the other way. It's called by imagination. Now you don't have to. And a lot of people don't. And that's why then it will be very important to get some very heavy-handed stewardship drives. Then you need those to help people do something that feels uncomfortable, even unnecessary. But maybe you could save a lot of energy on that if you had that piece of imagination where you could imagine that you are with your life in that envelope, and that is your house in that envelope. And once in your year, you could dramatize that in some kind of a way that you could always remember that it's not nickel and diming at all. At all. And he says, I don't want your bullock. I don't even want just your tithe. You know what I want? You. That's even Old Testament. Psalm 51. Oh, and then we get to that marvelous where one piece of the offering, because not only have we got people in these envelopes, we've got cake and pie and potlucks and bread and wine, and one of these get set aside, some bread and wine. That's what it is. Part of the offering gets set aside, ordinary bread and wine. But what a function. Because in that, Christ comes to break himself and break us open to each other. Open up. It's kind of an exaggeration of that offertory. It's the inside getting out. It's this inside getting out. And the delight of it is so great. It's called thanksgiving. Eucharist. Whew! Marvel. Oh, echo. Eucharist. I'm almost finished. And that would be a shame to think I was done with this, because these are all life forms, all Jesus forms, all worship forms. All of that is together. If one can see that, one only wants to give thanks. And part of the offering is also that you're not only got life in there, you've got not only your tractors, not only have you got some bread and wine, but you've got other people in mind, intercessory prayers. You've got all the Christendom in there and all the world. And that's the prayers are all part of the offertory. And you can only say, Our Father, who art in heaven. That's it. And then give each other and receive from God the great blessing and go out with all that going on out there and gathering and scrambling to come back and to see it all inside that you're going to find outside again. I've just gone through the worship service. Now, what does this mean that you hear worship described, you know, in this way? I should say that you, what does it mean to you? What do you see? What comes to your mind? How do you feel? And I'm asking a question that everyone can answer. You know, I'm not asking a question now that I know the answer for and you don't. No way. You could say, I don't understand. That is your answer. And that's what Holden permits. But it also permits you to say, I feel good. Or I understand something. I see something. I see lines now. I see things alongside each other. I see the hour and the rest of the time kind of together. But I'd like to ask you, what do you see, think, and feel, and imagine now about worship? We'll have some discussion, just some commenting, okay? I'll listen to you. Say it quickly. And then as you say your first sentence, improve it. Then get your second going. And get your third. And by the time you get your fourth, it'll be so marvelous, you'll be glad you said your first. Okay? So just come quickly. Just don't look away. Okay? That's helpful. All right. What are you thinking?
Worship as praise and celebration.
Good. Good.
So it makes me think that that song, All That I Have Is Thine Alone, that actually all our gifts are from God.
That's just it. All. Everything.
You reminded me of another saying that everyone's probably heard, is that you really don't give when you give of your personal possessions. You give when you give of yourself. And I think that was part of the message.
It was part of the message. Very interesting. A fine message, Pastor. And part of the message is how you got the message. And that's why, don't try to repeat what I said. Try to repeat or to say what you thought. Going around quoting me or a pastor or someone like that all week isn't going to be much help. What's more help is quoting yourself. What do you think? That's powerful. So, yes.
If it was just thinking and speaking, it's something you feel from the feet up through your whole body. It's a kind of vibrant thing.
Yes. Yes.
It's visceral.
It's visceral. It's visceral. Oh, they used to have viscerals in their offering, too. They had intestine offerings. Oh, there were some gory offerings. I mean, read the Old Testament. You like it, don't you, huh? Oh, I like the whole Bible. I wouldn't let anyone take a book from me. Well, read some of those offerings that they had. I mean, they knew what incense was. It was called stench. I mean, incense wasn't all shipped in from Japan or from China or from wherever. I mean, incense was something else that was visceral. Yes. And what are you thinking? What else?
Worship to me is also communion with other Christians.
Yes.
I find the whole thing having to do with the offertory and all these ways of thinking about it a challenge and really hard to get at. And you mentioned a hard stewardship drive. That's my committee, and I find it even more difficult to deal with.
Yes, I'm very sorry. Yes, it is hard. It is hard because it has to do with the particular, which is the offering or the pledge, having to do with the whole. And how do you get those connected? Not by raising it 2%. You know, from 5 to 7 or from 10 to 12. That doesn't do it. You have to go all the way and see that the particular represents everything. And then keep thinking what that means. Yes?
Don't worship just in silence. You worship by actions and words and deeds.
Yes, that's coming through. You need to say what you're thinking. There are not just three people in charge of what worship means. What else are you feeling about this morning and what you're sensing? Yes.
I'm passing out 300 garbage bags.
Pardon?
Large garbage bag. Tell everybody to get in them.
Oh, I can see it coming.
Yes. Right down the aisle.
Right down the aisle, getting in them, huh? Or having one person get up there for all the others. You know, however one does that, one still has to interpret, doesn't one? And one still has to make the connection. Not long ago, well, quite a while ago, I'll tell you a story about the sparrow later. I want more. There's a lot more out there. I know that you are thinking and feeling. Yes?
So the giving, our giving is always considered sort of that there are offerings, but we never seem to feel that actually that giving comes right back to us again. It's not, I mean, it's a constant giving and coming back.
Just watch her. She's in hand drama. It's called the church doesn't have many courses in hand speaking, but she's doing it. And out and back and yes, there's it. Get a little dance group going for your stewardship committee and help them understand that what goes out comes back in. That. Yes, it is that. And also if they find it very difficult to get a harvest field, you know, like 80 acres or 100, connected with the altar, what you do is you take your altar, put it on a truck, take it out to the farm, and then during some season, you let them borrow it for a week, see? And then every time they drive their tractor past it, or their combine, they look at their altar. That'll work. You don't need to do that more than once in their life. Yes.
I don't know whether this fits in when your conversation, because I don't get it all. But one thing we should do every morning is to pray for our pastors. Very definitely help them along.
Okay, that would be quite innovative, wouldn't it? That would be tough if you made it a requirement. But it's beautiful, yes, and...
I meant that seriously.
Another thing would be if your Sunday school class, for instance, I'll skip over into that, isn't doing well, that you cancel it. And that what you do is you meet when there's a tragedy. I mean, that would give you something to gather for, huh? At any time, like, and what would that mean? And when is there one? And why should you meet? And what would you do? And what would you read? And what would you study? And would you want to be a member of that group? And you said every morning, so she said every morning, and I'm thinking of another time, namely, when something happens.
Well, if you do it in the morning, you might not, if you don't, you might forget during the day.
Yes, so she's helping me. It's really quite true. My thing is almost too difficult because we're so scattered. We'd know in this village if there was a birth, right? We'd know if there was a birth. We'd know in this village if there was a tragedy. But we don't know in Seattle, maybe, or in Ballard. I mean, it's hard to know, and therefore take care of it in the morning. But also be ready to take care of it when it happens. And you do that by taking care of it in the morning. Those things get hooked together. Every morning sounds scheduled. What I'm asking for is something not scheduled at all, when it happens. Like have a sun, have a women's group meeting when it snows first, your first snowfall. Or when the tornado comes, then have a men's group come together. Those are called occasional services in the front of the hymnal. That's what that is. You have occasional times. Now, when's that? Oh-ho! I think we need to rediscover what occasional means. Huh? There are occasions when, and that's also worship time. When is there an occasion? I remember once at one of our colleges, and it was at Concordia, where I go several times a year to be with the community, and they hire me for, I don't know what it is, it usually is for 2 days. That's what they hire me for. And very often at midnight we have communion, and quite a few come. It's announced in the morning chapel. One year I said to Carl Lee, the chaplain there, let's not everyone's going to get to communion. Some of them will have emergencies. Couldn't we have emergency communion called, in the front of the hymnal, there's an abbreviated form. My father always used it in Nebraska when I was a kid, and he'd go out and give communion to people who were shut in. It was kind of an emergency. It was a special communion. I said, Carl, couldn't we have special communion or common we call it emergency communion at Concordia College? He said, I don't know why we couldn't. But what would be an emergency? I said, I don't know. I don't know if one has emergencies on a campus. So he said, well, why don't you announce that you will do it? So I announced that I would do it, and that if they saw me during the day and they had an emergency so they couldn't get to the midnight communion, they could see me. So I got a basket and bread and wine in the basket and a little cloth over it. The cloth had a bunny on it. That was kind of strange, but that's just how it came. It came with a little rabbit. It was not far from Easter, which was I was kind of glad for that. But that was an accident. That's called luck. Some people call it serendipity, and some people call it providence. But that was two things happening at the same time. It was almost Easter, and there was an Easter rabbit on the cloth, and this was communion. That's all together. Now, the Easter bunny has less to do with it than anything. But that's how some people remember when Easter comes. Even students who would say, oh, you're the Easter bunny. I didn't know how they knew. I wasn't running around with ears. They just saw me with a basket, and there was an Easter. I said, oh, maybe so. That got them very excited. So then I walk a little more, and someone would say, could we look? Now, the reason they wanted to look was it was covered. See, that's a very important thing. If you cover it, they'll peek. That's why a lot of people will open their gifts at Christmas. Not because the gifts are worth it, but because you wrap them. Sure. Oh, bread and wine. There, we could have communion, couldn't we? I said, do you want to? Oh, yes. We'd like it very much. And we did. And so, during the day, there were emergencies. Oh, am I glad to see you, Herb. Oh, ho! I just got out of a test and I'm in bad shape. Or I'm going to a test and I need something. I need communion. Could we do it right here in the hallway? I said, I don't know why not. My father did it in the living room in the country. I guess I could do it in the hallway. Why couldn't we do it in the hallway? He said, I don't know why we can't do it in the hallway. I said, I don't either. Let's do it in the hallway. So we'd have it in the hallway. I never went back to do it again. I mean, I would. It's very hard. It's very hard to find the emergencies. But most of life is not normal. Most of life is emergency. And maybe that's a part. And a lot of that gets done in visitation. A lot of that gets done by special groups. Emergencies are marvelous times. Those are the best times to learn. That's when Sunday school can really take hold. That's when worship really can come fast. You can skip over a lot of stuff and get right to it in emergencies. Beautiful times. I think for a parish to be equipped for emergency worship would only help your regular worship. Yeah. You understand? Isn't that a strange story? Should I have done that at Concordia College? Was that all right to you? It's hard sometimes to know whether you're shocking or significant. You know, I hate war, but one thing that war does is it gives the church a chance to minister in emergencies. I hate tragedies. One thing that the tragedy does is give the chance for the church to see what Christ does in emergencies.
You call an emergency when you bring communion to the sick before they go?
Yes, I would. I'm using the word emergency.
Yeah.
And not in an alarming way, but I'm trying to say, what about other than 9 to 10? Yeah. Then what?
They need it before.
I would say an emergency is when someone gets a promotion.
Yeah.
Yes, I've just 13 seconds is very good. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Part of this. I'm still tying it back to the offering. Isn't this part of what we're bringing?
Yes, sir, I do think that intercessory prayer means intercessory deed. Not only do I say, Lord, I want you to remember those, but through me, remember them. And that's all part of the offertory. It's being spent out there. It doesn't all get mailed to New Guinea.
What I'm getting at... We as members of the congregation are bringing our emergencies to the congregation, whether it be a promotion,
yes.
Traffic jam, or whatever.
That's good.
And,
it's very good.
Isn't this as well part of our offering?
Yes, I understand that too now, what you're saying. Yes, it goes both ways. It's a circle. That's right. And somehow that how does one have those imaginations, or how does one kind of do that? And I guess just by talking about it occasionally, maybe once a year at Holden or somewhere, so one can say what you said and understand it. Yeah.
There's one thing I like to have answered. I live at the Norse home, and they have communion once a month when the pastor comes in. But I take my communion in my church. Is it all right for me to take two communions a month?
Hmm.
That's a very
good question. When I was a boy, you should take only a few.
I don't take communion at the Norse home. I take it at the church.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to know, they want to know why I don't come down for communion. I say because I take it at the church.
Is one of your questions whether taking it twice a month is maybe too often.
That's right.
Yes.
Would it be all right to take it twice a month? I don't feel it's necessary. Mm-hmm.
See, that to be too quick in an answer could be too quick, because how many Christmases do you like a year? See? I mean, can you wait? And there have been customs in the church which have said... And Luther said, one good communion in your life is maybe all you need. I mean, one doesn't have to have communion every Sunday in order for them to take effect. And if you cherish a monthly communion, I think that's marvelous.
Question.
Yes.
Was there some place in the Bible or in the New Testament that said something about some of them having communion every day in the old Christian church?
Yes, and every week in the Christian church. Yes, daily.
Yeah, but that really don't answer the question.
That's right.
Well,
I think she's going to answer. I feel she's going to answer her own question. And I don't really, I'm not like a catechism that gives you the answer to your question. I would rather hear her.
Well, maybe it's up to me then.
Yeah. Yes, but what were you going to say? You said that doesn't really answer the question, namely daily.
Well, but because the Christian church have it every week. Well,
but
maybe the same people don't take it every week, do mm-hmm. they?
Very often they do.
Well, maybe I'll start taking communion when they have it at the nurse home. But I feel that once a month, if we live a Christian life. Well, that's a question for me to answer, I guess.
Herb,
yes.
I had an emergency, and I took communion twice within an hour, one for the Catholic Church and one for the Lutheran.
Twice within an hour. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes. Yes. But I have experienced that, too, several times within a day. Yes.
Maybe I'll ask my pastor what he thinks about it.
Yes. And there was a hand here. No? Okay.
Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Sometimes regulates a lot of our worship. And we do it out of a commandment kind of feeling. And I think many that have, you get commandment oriented, and worship never seems to happen other than on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. I want you to remember me.
I want you to remember me too.
That's a command. That's what I'm now in the commandment kind of statement. And the command is not always that I want you to remember me because, well, why do I want her to remember me? It comes out of a relationship. The beginning of that commandment is, back a few pages, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt. Look at all the things that we did together. Look how we got through the Red Sea. Look at this. You know what I would like for you to remember me in a day. I would like for you to take aside some time. You have to hook it up. Otherwise, it does feel pretty heavy-handed. But if it comes off a love story, and Luther skipped that love story pretty much. He said, I am the Lord your God. You shall have no other gods before me. Remember the Sabbath, you know, and then goes right on through. Not take the name, remember the... And you that love story is in there. You got to go back and read that one. Does that help?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, it does. It does. Love stories make remembering all the more necessary. Not as a command, but almost like a declaration and a promise. It's more the conjunctive mood, maybe, than the imperative. It's called the gospel imperative. In this book, I think it's in the bookstore, it's called Lord If. It's this way, Lord, if by Moses you put your hand on the waters to part them, and if you lower your voice into the deep of oceans and raise and call those drowned back to life, then you can get through to me. With your hand and your voice. And that's gospel. That first part is gospel. I mean, if you can, through Moses, part the waters to let the people through, and if you can get a prophet down out of the water and up and on the road back into Nineveh, then I think you can get through to me. It's an imperative. It means come through to me, Lord. It comes off the gospel. If, Lord, the gospel, if this has been meaningful, then surely we want to remember each other.
I don't think I'll ever be forgotten of this crowd.
See, there is another thing. That's what the Lord wished. I do not ever think I will be forgotten by this crowd, but some of them did forget him. But he it was really almost a human plea by God. It was a very human statement. Remember me.
Yeah.
Do this to remember me.
How come we never got a conversation before? I've been coming up for 5 years.
Well, I don't know.
I think I'd better go home.
Well, no, I think that I would just read a few more of your sentences. Here it. It was a rainy day, and I was coming home from church, and there I lay. I lay there in the rain till help did come. Right out of your story, your very words. Those are so beautiful.
I laid in the rain for an hour when I smashed my hip before the ambulance came after me, pouring raining down on me.
Oh, the hymn writers of the church. I was at a meeting once where they had a committee and about 300 people, and they said, well, this was worship committees, I was there, and you weren't there, but I was thinking of people like you, and it was said, don't think we have many Christian writers for worship. I think we're going to have to hire Jewish writers. This was at St. Olaf College. I mean, it wasn't St. Olaf faculty saying that, but it was Lutherans who got together who are in charge of worship. And that was about 9 years ago. And I just got in my car and drove home. I didn't say anything. But we don't have to go to the Jewish community. And I like the way the Jewish community writes. But our body of Christ can say the words. We have to hear the words and then write them down and then give them to tune writers and then we sing them. Yes. We have about 7 minutes. Let me ask you again to say something that you want to express. I mean, I have two stories I want to tell, but I can streamline them, but I want you to say what this means to you, what you're getting from it.
I sense a feeling of wholeness in your idea of the offering, particularly when you suggested taking the offering back and spreading it out to what you have. Because it seems to me, at least I often get the feeling of putting my offering, the rest of mine, to spend. And thinking of it the way you just express it, without us to put God's stamp or Christ's stamp on everything we did, with everything we got.
Those are mental pictures that no one can take from you. And there are sometimes mental pictures in here that we don't know we own.
Don't you think offering is not the best selection of words for what the offering is? And you're returning the gift. Mm-hmm. It's not really an offering.
So one has to work through old words. I'd like to pick up the beginning of the worship, too. Where the invocation in the name of the Father, splash, name of the Son, it's like three times underwater. It's three times water over you. It's a very wet time. And then you should get the mop. Mop up the floor around the baptismal font. That's a very wet time. Luther says, remember that in your baptism, you remember your burial with Christ. And your resurrection with Christ daily, and certainly also on that Sunday, in that Sunday hour. That is, you know, that is a baptismal recollection, re-entering that baptism in kind of drama form. And if occasionally you do kneel, that comes right after or right near that. You should almost feel that you're getting back down under and then standing up, and the mood gets joyous. You don't have to fly balloons and kites, but it should get some sense of exaltamus, you know, that. And that shouldn't stay a Latin word. That should feel like hooray, even if you've got tears, because hooray isn't always balloons. Your heart can leap while your eyes weep. So even as you're enjoying the offering and the offertory, get enjoyment of this other segment, the invocation, the name of, and then that means the name of the Father, that means There isn't anyone here who's inferior. And I don't care if you're a deacon, an elder, or a pastor. It's the same. We all own the name, and we're all owned by this family, one in the family. And then the differences come, because we all, again, are the same, caught in our underwear, or caught in our pain, or caught in our death, and caught in our sin, and there's nothing you can do one day but to say, Lord, I can't go on, and feel that if you're ashamed of sin, that also the guilt of death, because the wages of sin is death, and even from that we have forgiveness, not only from our sin, but we have the forgiveness for our death. And to be so glad for that, that you can say the name of God in a more excited way, and then have Christmas right there. That's all another piece of picture. And then to hear the word, the old word, oh, there, it's so old, and the newer word, and the new word of Jesus, and the cradle, which is still part of that word, and the sermon, which is the most contemporary, that's all word. So if the part one is all together, it's all us coming. And part two is us hearing. And part three is us sharing. And part four is us going. It's another way. Roman numeral 1, 2, 3, 4 don't always help in a printed form. You have to go home and on Monday morning think about it at breakfast time when you're talking or thinking of your pastor. Also think of these pieces of the liturgy. How do they fit together? Pages don't do it. Pages only tell you how far you're into it and how long it'll take yet. And it keeps you together so you don't make too many mistakes. And it sounds pretty good. But that isn't life form. That's still not a life form. It's a very abstract form. The hymnal is a very abstract form of the people who worship. It gets closer than that. Don't let the hymnal fool you. That's what I mean. Don't let the hymnal, beautiful as it is, take away the nearness and the dearness of each other and get in your way. Hardly any chance to move around when you're holding a big one in your hand like this. So sometimes maybe memorize things and just lay it down and just kind of let your hands, because sometimes maybe you'd like to reach over without anyone saying something and just grab a kid just once in the kid's life. Touch him. And then you can be godparent without anyone even knowing it, because you are. We are godparents to each other.
May I say one thing before I go? I don't want to leave these people thinking I laid in the rain with carelessness, but my husband couldn't find anyone home, so he had, and around the neighborhood, he walked a whole block before he could find someone home to call the ambulance. So there I lay.
Yes.
I didn't want you to think my husband left me there purposely.
I mean, can you just a little flute music in this, you know, by Diane? Isn't, I mean, really?
I have to straighten that out.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Well, just a closing comment. It may be that that liturgy, liturgia, it means to do. It comes also from. It's close to the word latrine. It means latrine keeper. It means servant. It means servant. It means it's a humble word. I don't care how fancy you print it. Liturgy really means to do whatever you do as servant, or as one who offers, so that we are the offering. To do that in the front of God. And church is always on. Church is always going. And liturgy is always flowing, always. And introits never quit. Wes took us into his introit again this morning. Introit is your theme. Wes's theme. I always write down the word before Wes even starts, and there it was. W-A-Y. I knew it. Wes is always on a way. Wes always goes to Isaiah or someplace where he talks about being on God's way. That's Wes. And you have your introit. Introit is your theme that you kind of harp on, that you kind of live by. You recognize yourself by it. It's the thing that they know you by, not only your haircut, but that helps, Joel. But also, they know you by that, not only by your name. And sometimes that changes, but that's introit. Introit is not just in the front of the hymnal. Introit is that driving thing in you. That's introit too. And Wes's introit, there it was. The way, a rough place will be made into level ground. Oh, Wes has got that memorized backwards, forwards, and sideways. And if Isaiah hadn't written it, Wes would have. He found it. He owns it. That's his introit. So, thank you. Our introits are always operating. We're always on invocation or in it. And in repentance and forgiveness can happen at 12 o'clock, 3:15, wherever. All that stuff is always operative. It's always on goal. So we go.